When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
VoiceOver Coffee Shop, episode number 49.
Welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we share our morning with some of the finest names in voiceover. And now, here's your host, voice actor Andrew Morrison.
Hi there, my name is Andrew Morrison, and welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we start our day with some of the finest names in voiceover. If you'd like to get to know a little bit more about me, feel free to visit my website at www.andrewdmorrison.com. In this video, an incredibly talented actor who is hilarious both on the mic and off of it, and one of the sweetest people you will ever meet has met me for coffee, my very, very good friend, Daniel Ross. Daniel Ross is the voice of some real animated icons, from Disney's current Donald Duck to Lucky the Leprechaun for the cereal brand Lucky Charms. He's also Starscream in Transformers games, and multiple characters in World of Warcraft Shadowlands, to name just a few. In this episode, we talk about researching a character before an audition, the process to unlocking your character tool belt, and making environmental choices in your acting to help bring a scene to life. So how do you take your coffee in the morning, man?
I can't do coffee anymore. I know. Why? I feel like a subhuman at this point because caffeine just completely destroys me inside and out. And mind you, I love a black cup of coffee. No sugar, no cream, just black like my soul. And that's my jam. It just doesn't love me. So if I ever do coffee, I do decaf, half hot water, and it's just pathetic.
what do you generally do to start off your work day then?
So when I start my work day, usually the first thing I do is I take care of Buddy. I uncover him in the mornings because he gets covered at night, mm-hmm. and I'll feed him
Beautiful
and give
bird.
Him some love.
What kind of bird is
and, that? Buddy, his name is Buddy. He's a crimson-bellied conure.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll take care of him and then I'll, you know, forage for some breakfast and take my vitamins and, you know, get some greens, get some probiotics in me. And then I just go right to town on auditions or, you know, tidying up or whatever I need to do to really set myself up for success.
Fantastic.
Just depends on the day, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it does.
And some of those days I brush my teeth.
How did you get wrapped up in this whole industry? Like how did you get started as voiceover? I heard you on a panel talking about how you used to do impressions on old radio stations and stuff like that. But like how did you get swept up in here?
Yeah, you know, there came a point where I realized that I've always been a voice actor. I just didn't know it until later in life. Because I've always done silly voices. Even my normal speaking voice is not your typical speaking voice. It's a bit quirky and I'm very animated.
Right.
So because I love the performing arts, I would get categorized in, you know, the quirky roles, the character-y roles and things like that. And I never put the pieces together. But eventually, I grew up watching Saturday morning cartoons and like you said, doing impressions of all the characters, Looney Tunes, the Mickey, you know, Mickey Mouse characters, Transformers, G.I. Joe, Masters of the Universe, Gem and the Holograms. I mean, just you name it, I was watching it and imitating them. And I guess just later in life, it just the light bulb went off and went, hey, there are people behind those voices. There are actors behind those voices. And that's a job that somebody could have. Why not me? Why not me? I think the moment precisely is when I was watching, like, mid-90s, the show Beast Wars Transformers.
Okay.
I was really enthralled with the type of character voices that they used and some of the versatility of some of the actors behind the scenes, like Scott McNeil, who was playing four different characters on the show, and they were all main characters, and I wouldn't have known unless I looked at the credits. Wow. And I just thought that ability to be a chameleon was really enticing. So I would go to Transformer conventions and I would start meeting the voice actors. And it was really interesting because I noticed early on, these people are like me. You know, they're quirky, they're happy, they're genuine, they love what they do. I felt such an affinity towards them. And later on, through those contacts at conventions, I started to get encouragement. And that meant the world to me. So that really was the beginning of that whole journey for me, was through the encouragement of others and the realization that, yeah, there are people behind those voices. Isn't that cool?
That's super cool. Yeah. And you've been in a couple of the shows that you just ended up naming. What was your first role?
My very first role. Are we talking voiceover? I think, I'll put it into two categories. The first big one for me was Transformers the Game back in 2007, where
Starscream.
I played the voice of Starscream. Yes, bring me the old Spock humans. That was so much fun because I married my hobby with something that I was really passionate about.
Yeah.
Before that, in the unprofessional side of things, I was doing radio commercials for car dealerships. At one point, I was doing a really bad Gilbert Gottfried, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it was Singer Subaru out of, like, Massachusetts or Rhode Island. And I would talk like this, come visit Singer Subaru, you know, and then we would do different characters. And I think that was a lot of fun. That was my first, you know, foray into voicing and having that be something that compensated me, which I just thought was so neat.
Yeah, so... With all the, because you're associated with some very large roles, like especially Donald Duck. I'm sorry, especially Donald Duck.
That was a Freudian slip.
A little bit, but like, what was one where you just kind of got the script and you're like, I relate to this character. This is me on paper. Like, what was one where it was just you pouring your heart out into yourself into that booth?
I think, if I'm speaking honestly, every time I get a script, I feel the same way about the character that I'm playing. And it's because I come from the perspective of recognizing that the solace that I received as a child and as a young adult from the cartoons and the TV series that I watched meant so much to me. They provided me so much comfort in times that I needed them. So to have the roles reversed and to be in that position to create that solace for other people is a huge responsibility to me. So I take it very seriously anytime I get a script. Now, with that said, Donald Duck probably was the one that I poured every ounce of my being into, not just because I love the character, but because he meant so much to me. Growing up, as you probably know, I tell the story often. My mom, who loved to be called Mama Duck, she taught me the voice when I was like 3 years old. And that became a thing for me. I would entertain my friends doing the impression at the time. And people would call me, you know, Daniel Duck, Ducky Ross, you know, things like that. And so when that opportunity crossed my path, I was like, I have to do my best. I can't just... you know, do it and send it out. I need to do my research. I need to make sure that the mechanism is strong. I need to make sure that I'm sounding accurate. And I really beat myself up over it when I first auditioned because I wanted to get it right. And I was still very fresh and very new to Los Angeles. So this was my opportunity to say, hey, this is something I do really well. Nail it, kiddo. Let's go. So I went back and I watched 80 years worth of cartoons and, you know, the legacy of Donald Duck that has just been on this planet for generations. I had so much material to sift through And what that gave me was the ability to say, this is what the character would do, this is what the character wouldn't do. Or here's a sound that maybe I could mine from like 60 years ago that I could incorporate into my audition that they would recognize as being a part of that character, you know, part of that connective tissue. So that really was the big experiment for me, and my gamble worked. I was called back multiple times. I took risks, and ultimately I was cast in an amazing show called Mickey and the Roadster Racers all the way back in 2015. It was wild, absolutely wild. That's one of the greatest, if I'm being honest, one of the greatest journeys that I've been on probably in my entire career.
That's fantastic, dude. That's super neat. And since then, you've created a character development process that takes, what, 3 months? That you teach to people?
Yeah.
So what exactly is the breakdown of that character development process and finding new tools in your set?
So when I teach workshops, or if I do one-on-one coaching with my students, what I do is I try to break down the idea that as a performer, you have to understand what your capabilities are so that you can leverage them in this industry. Because as a performer, as an actor, I just want to be involved. I want to be in the room. You tell me what you want me to do and I'm going to do it, you know, because I feel like I have that range. But the reality of the situation is if you know inherently what you're capable of, you can laser focus on what it is you are really good at. And hopefully make some money, you know, doing this job. And of course, get an agent, make sure that they see dollar signs when they look at you and hear you. Because when you get into, you know, Hollywood or, you know, New York or any of the hubs where there's lots of actors, there's hundreds of people who look like you, sound like you, do exactly what you do. So what is it that makes you different and stand out from the crowd? So this process that I went through basically was 90 days. It's a period of discovery, learning, you know, emptying my brain to see what it is that I currently think I can do, my rough draft, so to speak.
Right.
The second part of the process is refining it, getting a better understanding of what my limitations are and what the things that I excel in. And then the third part of it is just experimenting and seeing how we can expand the tool chest that we have to be able to use on a moment's notice when you're auditioning every single day, once, twice, five times, 20 times a day. You don't have time to think about, you know, what was my character's relationship like with their father? What did they have for breakfast? You know, what's the weather outside? You just don't have time to think about things in that level of intricacy. So you just have to make a decision and go and make your creative choices on to the next one. Do your best. And that's a process. That's something that, you know, requires a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of training, to be quite honest. I still train to this day. I go take workshops. I listen to my peers and colleagues. I see what works for them. And then, of course, the industry changes. The sound of different cartoons and the authenticity of the voices is something that is constantly changing. So you got to keep up with the trends. You got to know your instrument. And that's really what I delve into when I do those workshops.
Gotcha. What's something in either a recent workshop or something that maybe a colleague has recently said that's changed your outlook on how you approach the industry?
That's a really good question. I think a lot of what I've done when I first got started was, again, quirky, high energy animation, akin to like Looney Tunes and really like cartoony voices. Mm-hmm. And when I started delving into video games, which are much more of a realistic acting performance, or within very minor constrictions, if you're in a certain type of world, like I have to maintain a transatlantic accent or a British accent, whatever the case may be, a mid-Atlantic accent, you know, that constrains me in a certain respect. It limits my tool chest, so I have to know how to navigate that. Mm-hmm. But I think just learning how to really emulate the environment, the type of conversation that you're having, as an example, I'm talking to you virtually face-to-face, mm-hmm. but if I was talking to you across the room, I might sound a little bit different. If I'm writing on a chalkboard, I'm going to sound a little bit different. So I have to make those environmental choices to be able to bring the scene to life, to be able to give the animators and the people behind the scenes enough stuff to work with. And I think learning that from my peers has definitely been a challenge, but something that I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love being more actionable in the booth.
So, oh, yeah.
How were you finding work when you first moved to LA, and how has that changed as you became more prominent in the industry?
I knew when I moved to Los Angeles that I needed to have something that was not acting, because you just can't expect that it's going to come to you. So I was working my normal job. I used to be a manager at Target, and I chose the hardest job when I moved out here, which was overnight, all the trucks coming in, the freight going out. So I was exhausted, you know, during my days, but I had my days free. So I could audition, I could network, I could go to parties or whatever the case would be. I had that leverage. I would just lose sleep. So that was really important when I got started. And my game plan was, I'm going to spend the first 6 months just getting my lay of the land, making sure that I'm comfortable, making sure that I have good routines, making sure that I, you know, establish myself with the community so that I feel like a person living in an actual place and not just a transplant trying to do my thing.
Right.
And then the next 6 months was me trying to get my agent, really trying to network, trying to take workshops and learn from people. And within that first year, I got my first agent with Michaela Hicks at Solid Talent. And she gave me a green behind the ears guy a shot. And I started taking workshops. One of my first ones with my very good friend, Debbie Derryberry, the voice of Jimmy Neutron. Mm-hmm. And I very quickly learned I had to brush off my ego, because, man, I was learning things that I had no idea, no concept of before.
Right.
And so, yeah, that was really the process of the beginning process of my learning, and also just, I guess, my origin story out here. I started booking, you know, I was auditioning all the time. I spent so much time and effort trying to do my best, trying to learn. And when things started to work, when I started to actually have some income, I quit my job. And I started driving for Lyft part-time to supplement while I was doing the voiceover stuff. It was a gamble. It was a risk. Mm-hmm. But there was something in my gut that was telling me, now's the time. And I'll tell you how I knew I was right. The day that I drove off the parking lot of Target for the last time, I worked with the company for 10 years. The day that I drove off the parking lot, it was 8:00 in the morning. I was exhausted from my shift. Michaela calls me and says, hey, you booked Lucky the Leprechaun.
Yeah.
So I literally had to pull my car over and I went, I got lucky. Oh my gosh, I really did just get lucky. I booked a job. I feel so lucky. And it happens to be lucky. So it was my way of saying, hey, thank you, universe. You hear me. I'm taking the steps that I'm supposed to be doing, trusting my intuition. And that really was the beginning of everything for me.
Magically delicious transition.
That's so. Right. Delicious.
So how are you finding work now? Like what is your overall process? Is it all from agents, or do you do any scouting on your own?
Oh, absolutely. Scouting never stops. You have your own network, you have your own contacts. And a lot of it is really just establishing relationships with people, being a genuine human being and being good to work with. I think really will set you up for a lot of success. Yeah, I mean, I audition all the time, but sometimes I work with somebody, I befriend them, they have another project going on, they invite me to read and I book. And then I go to my agent and I say, hey, I booked this thing, here you go. So, you know, that's always nice. But yeah, I would honestly say probably like 50 to 60% of the work that I get is on my own still. And then the rest is just me having access to amazing things through my agency. And I'm really proud to be represented by CESD out of Los Angeles, the voiceover department. My agents, Kathy, Sam, Brittany, Aaron, Bo, I have such an amazing team, and they really treat me well, and they know what I can do, and they leverage that so that we can be successful.
Gotcha. And is that why you focus so much of your time on your social media presence? Because you are posting stuff literally every day. Is that so people can like both know who you are and also get to know who you are a little bit more? Is that
absolutely where that ties in? And like you were saying before about like, what do I do during the pandemic? I can't go have coffee with people.
Right.
I was in the exact same predicament. So I'm like, how do I go do lunch? How do I go do coffee? What am I supposed to do to stay in people's periphery? Because ultimately, when a casting director is going through their hundreds of submissions, I want them to see my name and go, oh yeah, Daniel, awesome. You know, and next time they have something in mind, they think about me. Oh, I remember Daniel did this, bring him onto this project. So it really is just a matter of staying in people's periphery. So I said, look, here's an opportunity for me to do some physical comedy. Here's an opportunity for me to just be silly and to be my true, authentic self. Mm-hmm. And one of the very first videos that I put on TikTok was me in the shower squirting ketchup, mustard, and mayonnaise all over myself. And I had a moment where I thought to myself before the first squeeze, am I really doing this? Is this really what I'm putting out to all of my peers and colleagues who know me as a certain version of me?
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, break out of the box, Daniel. Break out of the box. Trust that intuition. So I squirted that ketchup, mustard, mayonnaise all over myself. And, you know, within the first week, there are people who are like, oh, saw your video. That was interesting. And of course, I'm like, oh, no, I messed up. I did the bad thing. But no, that was absolutely the right thing to do. And it has been so freeing to just play and have fun and build an audience, let people understand who I am as a person. And I think as a tool for my agents, you know, if they're pitching me for something, they can go to my TikTok and say, look, Daniel's got over 1 million followers over there. Does that have any weight or bearing in their final decision? Maybe, maybe not, but at least I've given my agents that talking point. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important in this industry. How do you stand out from the crowd? So there have been lots of opportunities that have come my way because of TikTok. I'm so grateful for it, but I will never forget the first time I logged into the app feeling like, you know, my dad playing Nintendo for the first time. Like, right. Why does it have two buttons? You should have a joystick and one button. That's all you need. And so, you know, I just kind of fiddled through it and eventually came to love it. And now it's just a huge part of my life, social media.
Yeah. What else do you do outside of the booth? What do you do to recharge your batteries? What do you enjoy?
Oh, man. Well, obviously, the pandemic stifled a lot of those things because yeah. I love, you know, being out with my friends. You know, I would host a weekly or even a month, sorry, a monthly Cards Against Humanity night with Ooh. My friends. I'd go play laser tag. I would do escape rooms. I love to travel, too. I've been to Japan and Mexico, and I'll be in Switzerland teaching voiceover later this year. So those are some of the things that I love. And of course, collecting, you know, my hobby Transformers. I still do that to this day. And yeah, those are the things I love. Playing with my bird buddy and just, you know, making smiles, doing what I do, living my dream, so to speak. That's what I do.
Awesome, man. So if you could write yourself a letter and send it back to yourself before you made that jump to move to LA, what would that letter say?
Do it now. Don't wait. Do it now. Don't wait. Los Angeles to me was a distant magical land far away where dreams come true. And I spent much of my younger adult life really trying to navigate the area that I lived in. I grew up in Maryland and, you know, we had some outlets for, you know, performance and to be an actor, but I was, you know, an extra. I was a stand-in. I didn't really get a lot of like leading roles unless it was like an independent film. And so, you know, I took the bull by the horns and started working with my best friend, Justin Timpain, on, you know, making our own movies. We watched the movie Clerks 2 and we heard them decide they were going to buy the Quick Stop. And we're like, hey, why don't we buy the Quick Stop? So we became our own, you know, a film entity. And we made a bunch of films and we had success on those, starting with Ninjas versus Zombies, Ninjas versus Vampires, and then Ninjas versus Monsters. And that was such a learning experience for me because it just said, you have to make your own dreams come true. Nobody's going to give it to you. And so the prospect of Los Angeles, this place so far away, I just said, you know, I think I need to do it. I think I need to give it a shot. And before I moved here, I was contemplating a run for state Congress because I'm very invested in politics. And I thought that I could bring film credits back to the DC, Maryland area. But I said, no, I need to be selfish this time. I need this next endeavor needs to be about what I want to do. And it was the right decision.
Awesome. And so where can people find you and what is your TikTok handle and find your coaching and anything else you just want to plug at them?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for that. I love the opportunity to plug myself. You can find me across social media under Actor Daniel Ross. I've made it very easy. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of those places, even YouTube, Actor Daniel Ross. My website where you can book me for one-on-one coaching or to get an autograph is actordanielross.com. Again, I've made it very easy. So yeah, that's the best way to keep in touch with me and follow my shenanigans. And there's some really cool stuff coming. I can't wait to talk about.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on. This has been great.
Thanks for having me. I feel like I've got the coffee Jenneth already and I haven't had any coffee.
I really hope you enjoyed this amazing talk with Daniel about how he discovers what his capabilities are through rigorous training and fun, and how he learns how to use his tool chest of talent at a moment's notice. If you'd like to know more about Daniel and his amazing work or book him for coaching, you can find him at www.actordanielross.com. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop. For more information on guests, new episodes, and more, be sure to visit www.vocoffeeshop.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.